KZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. Former President Donald Trump back in North Carolina for the second day in a row at a rally in Greensboro.
The polls are open for early voting in North Carolina and every day from now till November 2nd and then on November 5th.
The federal case accusing Trump of mishandling classified documents after he left office was dismissed this summer. And now ABC News has learned that the judge who did that, Aileen Cannon, is on a list of possible picks for attorney general. Her name appears on a Trump campaign document alongside about a dozen other potential candidates. Meanwhile, former President Obama in Madison, Wisconsin, campaigning for the Harris-Walz ticket.
Do not think this is a distraction or a joke. Get off your couch and do what?
Meanwhile, E. coli in McDonald's Quarter Pounders has been linked to 49 illnesses and one death in recent weeks. This is ABC. The Supreme Court of Georgia has turned down an emergency appeal from the Republican Party in its effort to keep a set of new and controversial balloting rules in place.
Georgia's highest court unanimously rejects an appeal by the Republican National Committee, which aimed to reinstate a series of rules adopted last month by the state election board and struck down last week by two state judges. One of those rules required a hand count of ballots to confirm the machine tallies. Another called on county boards to conduct a reasonable inquiry into the results before they're certified. The five-member board that adopted those rules is controlled by Republicans who've been endorsed by Donald Trump.
ABC national correspondent Stephen Portnoy. And Honda has announced the second major recall this month. The high-pressure fuel pump may crack and leak fuel, increasing the fire risk. This covers Accord and Accord hybrids made from 2023 through 2025, along with the 2025 Civic, Civic Hybrid, and the CR-V Hybrid. Mike Dubusky, ABC News.
I'm James Kelly with WBZH News, your news roundup in quick podcast form. Find it anytime on the WBZH website at buzzofthenorth.com.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
Will you dress up for Halloween and what will you wear?
I'm not going to lie, I'm a lazy Halloweener.
A lazy Halloweener.
I just wore a football jersey and call it a day.
I have a prisoner costume and it goes on over your other clothes. So I'll probably put that on when I take trick-or-treaters. I was never a huge Halloween guy to begin with. Never a huge Halloweener. A new phrase has been coined here tonight.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Sometimes as dads, I think we're too hard on ourselves. We get down on ourselves on not being able to, you know, we're the providers, but we also have to learn to take care of ourselves. Arapaho way, you got to pray for yourself as well as for everybody else, but never forget yourself. Self-love made me a better dad because I realized my worth.
Never stop being a dad. That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tome Olson. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Former President Barack Obama was in Wisconsin Tuesday. He was at a rally at Madison's Alliant Energy Center with Governor Tim Walz. The goal was to rally voters on the first day of early voting.
It is not just policies that are on the ballot. It is who we are and what we stand for.
There were so many people who attended that rally at the Alliant Energy Center that there were major traffic backups, even causing some school buses to be delayed. We have new data on gun violence here in Wisconsin. Here's Terry Bell.
A new study finds 830 people in Wisconsin were killed by guns in 2022. That includes homicides and suicides. That's more people than died in car crashes. The numbers come from the Wisconsin Anti-Violence Effort Education Fund. More than three-fourths of people shot to death in Wisconsin were Black.
And that's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tome Olson. This is Civic Media News.
NBA basketball tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The NBA regular season begins tonight in Boston with the Celtics against the New York Knicks. The Bucks are headed to Philadelphia to face the 76ers in their season opener tomorrow. Word is Chris Middleton will not play, still recovering from surgery on both of his ankles. Baseball, game one of the World Series, not until Friday night when the Dodgers host the Yankees. The last time the two teams competed in the Fall Classic was 1981. The Brewers making changes to their coaching staff. Al LaBeouf and Eric Tyson have been been promoted to hitting coaches, Ozzie Timmons is out after 3 seasons with the team. College football, the Badgers with a night game this week. They host number 3-ranked Penn State Saturday night. The Packers are in Jacksonville Sunday against the Jaguars. Kenny Clark on how they move defensive end Rashawn Gary against the Texans, sometimes over the center.
Yeah, it opened up a lot. Just allow him to get on the move, you know, get in the A's and B gaps, you know, so he can use his ability. It was huge for us, and he had a lot of pressures off of it.
With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Some showers around tonight with a mostly cloudy sky, a little breezy at times, and colder with lows in the mid-30s. And not as warm for tomorrow, a gradual clearing, highs only in the mid-50s. Shower chances return on Thursday, high upper 50s. Currently 57 degrees.
Dom Salvia.
Next time, Earl Ingram joins me. Cowboys for Trump founder J6 conviction is upheld, and Donald Trump backs out of paying for a dead soldier's funeral. We'll tell you why. Tune in.
The Dom Salvia Show, weekdays 4 till 6.
You're listening to the Buzz of the North, WBZH, Hayward's home for Up North News Radio.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's a good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut. He need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade. Hey, Kadagi to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You are listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot. Hey, we discuss local, national, Native news and events. And as you know, Chuzunk, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
Yes, you are right, Dega. This portion of the show is supported by Strong Hearts Native Helpline. October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and Strong Hearts offers culturally appropriate support and advocacy for Native Americans. You can call or text them anytime for free at 1-844-7-NATIVE or chat online at strongheartshelpline.org.
Hey, we have a couple guests on today here, and one of them, they're from the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, and one's Angela Barnes, and she's director of New Jomo, and Cheyenne Hensley, who's a sexual assault advocate with Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center, a New Jomo program, and welcome to Native Roots Radio.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Right on, right on. Hey, this is October's Domestic Violence Month, and you know, let's start from the bare bones here. What is domestic violence? And Angela, I wonder if you could start us off.
Sure. Domestic violence has also, well, it's also known as intimate partner violence, or IPV. And it can mean a couple different things for domestic violence. And a lot of people aren't aware that it can actually be between somebody that you've lived with. So like a sibling or cousin or something. It can also be somebody that you've had a relationship with, somebody who you share a child with. So it's not, it can mean a couple different things, but it's any violence, I guess, or, and that could be abuse, emotional, physical, financial, spiritual. It can mean a lot of different things.
Definitely. You know, you have a sexual assault empowerment group coming up in October, on October 25th. Can you tell the people about that and how people can attend?
Yeah, Cheyenne is actually the facilitator of that support group, so if she wants to take that one.
Sure. So every month, New Jomo holds a support group for sexual assault survivors, in which we gather. We usually have a meal. We'll have a little spirit dish, make some offerings, and in our group, our survivors, it's meant for a safe place for our survivors to come and not feel alone, and where they're able to express themselves and express the things they've gone through in dealing with sexual assault. So our group, monthly, we bring up topics. We discuss topics on, you know, what sexual assault is. We discuss different healing. We've been discussing alternative healing methods, bringing that traditional healing into, you know, our space, and empowering, like, our women to utilize the services we have locally. We also do, like, a traditional craft, and kind of talk amongst one another. And usually towards the end, we all like to just sit around and visit. Usually I'm like, come on, girls, we gotta go. It's time to go. And but yeah, if you're interested in attending our empowerment group, you can reach out to myself or Angela, and we're more than happy to get you signed up and welcoming you into our space.
You know, that's awesome. And part of domestic violence is all the secrets, and I know it's hard for our people to come out and talk about this. What are some of the things that safeguard people that can show up to your group and know that they're safe and in the community? And Cheyenne, could you answer that?
Can you, like, define a little bit more of, like, safeguard? Like, what?
Well, I know we come from a small community. Everyone knows everyone, and how do we protect our anonymity and be able to speak freely? I know that's a thing that is sometimes it's hard for people to talk about what's happening to them, and how do we protect our relatives?
Oh, absolutely. We are all about keeping things confidential in our space. When somebody new comes in and joins our group, everyone in our group kind of signs, like, an agreement that what happens in our group stays in our group. You know, whoever we see here is who we see here, and we try to keep that space safe. So somebody who, you know, because we are such a small community, we might know somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. So upon joining the group, you agree to a set of rules that's pretty heavy on confidentiality and ensuring each other's identities are remain confidential there. And kind of building, like, a network, you know, that support network amongst each other. You know, it's like, yeah, I know you from group, you know, oh, I'll see you at group, you know, oh, I look forward to going to group and seeing my, you know, my other friends who are at group. We're building those bonds right now in our groups and our spaces. So our women are looking forward to coming. You know, they're like, you only hold it once a month. And I'm like, yeah, they kind of wish we could meet more often. So that's hoping we could do that more in the future.
Yeah, that's powerful, Cheyenne. Angela, you know, I got a question here. You know, what brings you to work every day? Why do the work this has got to be hard, just hard on your own psyche, and what motivates you? This is amazing work that you two are doing.
Well, thank you. We appreciate that. I think for me personally, and I do think for a lot of people that do this work,
you know, I think it's not really, it's not uncommon. Many of us are survivors and of some kind of violence. If it's, you know, not domestic violence, personally, it's, you know, there's secondary victims who also, you know, have witnessed or experienced a family member. It could also be with sexual assault, sexual exploitation or trafficking. So for me, it's, I think it's the healing work, and I think we're able to continue to do it because of the support we get from our coworkers, our agency, and being able to help survivors. That's the main drive.
Well, this is amazing work, and we got another segment here. Really want to dig deep in this, and our gratitude here to be able to amplify the work that you do for the community. And this is so important work, and so needed. And October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and we're here with Angela and Cheyenne, and from Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center in Minneapolis, and we'll be right back after this short break.
I heard sex trafficking happens a lot in Indian country. What is that?
Here are some of the real reasons why sex trafficking happens in Indian country. Unequal gender roles that were forced on us by colonization. Communities don't have enough resources. Silence around domestic and sexual violence. Lack of attention and justice for missing and murdered indigenous people. There's a lot of behavior that keeps our communities out of balance. These are just a few true reasons why native communities are targeted by traffickers. When these acts of violence happen in our communities, it opens us all up for exploitation.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
As we age, it's important to invest in our health and to help protect it. Like the flu, COVID-19 is always changing. That's why it's important to stay up to date on your vaccines. By getting the flu and COVID-19 vaccines, you can renew your body's defenses and lower the risk of getting sick. Get your health boost and protect yourself against the flu and COVID. Find vaccines near you at vaccines.gov. Again, that's vaccines.gov. Vaccines.gov.
Minnesotans age 65 plus might qualify for Health Partners Minnesota Senior Health Options. The plan includes personal support, coverage for medical prescription drugs and dental, plus over 30 extra benefits. Eligibility information is available at healthpartners.com/oneplan. Health Partners is a health plan that contracts with both Medicare and the Minnesota Medical Assistance Medicaid program to provide benefits of both programs to enrollees. Enrollment in Health Partners depends on contract renewal.
Every day, our people suffer at the hand of domestic and sexual violence. But you are sacred and deserve to be safe in your own home. Strong Hearts Native Helpline is here to help. Native-centered, empowerment-based, trauma-informed advocates offer safety, sovereignty, and support. Call or text 844-7NATIVE. To chat online, visit www.strongheartshelpline.org. Reach out today.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by J.S. Bean Factory off Randolph Avenue in St. Paul. Only the good stuff keeps us awake.
Hey, we are here with Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center staff, Angela Barnes, director of NUJOMA, and Cheyenne Hensley, sexual assault advocate with the Minnesota Indian Women Resource Center. And I want to ask you guys, where is the Minnesota Indian Resource Center located? And I wonder, Angela, if you could answer that, because we have people all over the country listening to this.
Sure. We're located at 2300 15th Avenue South in Minneapolis. You know, for people that aren't really sure of the area, we also will direct them kind of, we're right across the street from IHB and the Indian Health Board, and we share a parking lot with the Indigenous People's Task Force, not too far from Franklin.
Oh, cool. And Cheyenne, how long have you been working for Minnesota Indian Resource Center in Minneapolis?
I'm fairly new to the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. I've been here since March, but I've been in the NUJOMA department since June.
cool. And Angela, how long you been with Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center?
I started in February of 2022. So originally I came on as a sexual assault advocate, and now I'm a director of NUJMO. So.
Well, that's also a start, kind of start over here. And I wonder what is NUJMO program, and what does the word mean?
Yeah, so NUJMO is our gender-based violence programming, and NUJMO means she, they, or he heals in Ojibwe, but we typically go by she heals because we're the Minnesota Indian Women's Resource Center. So we typically do work with survivors of gender-based violence. Some of the things that we do in our department are we respond to forensic exams for medical advocacy. So when a woman is experiences domestic violence or sexual assault or sexual exploitation or trafficking, she can go into HCMC in the emergency room and we'll respond, meet her there, and help walk her through that forensic exam piece and offer that support and handholding is some of the, or one of the words that we've used to describe it, but we literally will sit at the bedside and hold her hand. So we've also do law enforcement interviews, reporting their gender-based violence to the police. We've also attended court trials to be supportive for that. We've also helped with like victim impact statements in court through hearings and trials and things like that. We do OFPs or orders for protection in court. So we do a few different things. We also do like the support groups that Cheyenne facilitates. We have another advocate here who is currently out on family or maternity leave, but she also provides assistance and facilitates the domestic violence groups typically, but Cheyenne is doing both and all. So she's doing a wonderful job.
Amazing. How can someone like me get help for a friend that I know is being abused? Is I know we all want to stay out of people's business, but this is like, we want to also help our friends. How can we help them?
I think as mentioned earlier, this is something that a lot of the time happens in secret. So I think bringing light to that and, letting, if there's a friend, unfortunately, I think it rests, if there's, men experience domestic violence as well. But, if there's a woman who's suffering, and this also happens a lot in the LGBTQ community, it's not really isolated to a gender or an economic, any economic status or anything like that. It happens across races. It's prevalent. It can happen to anyone. So I think that, if somebody sees something or you see people that are, there's something happening, if you're a male and this is a male perpetrating against a woman, maybe holding or stepping up if you know that male and saying, hey, that's not okay. That's not acceptable. Mm-hmm. And it's also for our friends that are going through it, letting them know that they're not alone. Connecting to resources, support is such it's so vital because when people think that and victim survivors think that they're going through it alone, one of the main weapons of a perpetrator is isolation and, connecting them or disconnecting them from family, close friends who support them. They want to be the only person who's giving them information, so your family doesn't love you. And if they've cut their family off from them, then they may believe that, your mom doesn't want to hear from you anymore. And it happens. And we see, our client relatives going through and a lot of them, that's the experience, are isolated. So resources, providing support and, holding perpetrators, and sometimes it's not even a scolding. It's just, taking them aside and being like, hey, what you said is not okay. It doesn't have to be, stern or anything. It could just be a conversation. You know, it's there's a lot of different things that people can do to help.
Yeah, that's cool. And I'm glad that you brought up that it's not just women that are affected, but men and our relatives and the GLBTQ group. And, you know, what are the resources available, Cheyenne? What else is out there that can help our relatives that are in this plight?
So luckily, Minnesota is home to, Strong Hearts, the Strong Hearts, helpline. Also, we have a few programs here, right here in Minneapolis. We have our neighboring program, the Women's Life, Indigenous Women's Life Net at the, Minneapolis, the Indian Center over there. We also have the Sexual Violence Center that's close by. We have the Domestic Abuse Project. I do believe they have an advocate in Little Earth. Day One Crisis Hotline is a 24/7 crisis hotline that they could talk to someone and get resources if they're fleeing an abusive relationship. They have access to shelter, women's shelters, bed openings. There are other programs out here in the community that help women flee in these types of situations, like women's advocates, Tubman. I believe Tubman's in Maplewood. I know Division of Indian Works has a sexual or domestic violence men's and women's group going on over there. Cornerstone is also a big place in Bloomington where we make a lot of referrals to. We're building a partnership with where they have shelter and housing. They have support groups there. They have access to, again, like safe housing. And then we also work a lot with the Domestic Abuse Center downtown, Hennepin County Domestic Abuse Center. So if somebody who has experienced domestic violence and they're wishing to get an order of protection, we accompany them, bring them to the Domestic Abuse Center downtown, and they speak with legal advocates. We help them access order of protections and or a harassment order, a domestic abuse no contact order, I'm probably forgetting some, so my apologies, but those are just some of the community programs that we work with and reach out to.
You know, one of the things I wonder, sometimes victims return and stay with their abusers? And I know there's a plethora of things, Angela, and I know one of the things is, and I know Strong Hearts really helps with this, is that they have pets, and sometimes that's used as a pawn. And I know I have pets, Angela, and it's sad, and people go, and we just got to let them know that there is help out there for people like that have pets.
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, Women of Nations is a shelter that will accept pets. So there's also programming. I know that there was funds that were being looking for, like, requests for proposals for, like, places that will take in house emergency.
This is the Buzz of the North, 910 AM WBZH.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. Former President Donald Trump back in North Carolina for the second day in a row at a rally in Greensboro.
The polls are open for early voting in North Carolina and every day from now till November 2nd and then on November 5th. Oh.
The federal case accusing Trump of mishandling classified documents after he left office was dismissed this summer. And now ABC News has learned that the judge who did that, Aileen Cannon, is on a list of possible picks for attorney general. Her name appears on a Trump campaign document alongside about a dozen other potential candidates. Meanwhile, former President Obama in Madison, Wisconsin, campaigning for the Harris-Walz ticket.
Do not think this is a distraction or a joke. Get off your couch and do what?
Meanwhile, E. coli in McDonald's Quarter Pounders has been linked to 49 illnesses and one death in recent weeks. This is ABC.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Early voting is now open across Wisconsin. Each municipality sets its own early voting locations and hours. When you show up to vote early, it should work very similarly to Election Day. You show some ID, poll workers will help you identify a precinct and give you your absentee ballot. That ballot will be sealed, you'll sign the envelope, and it'll go back to your local clerk's office where it'll be locked away until Election Day. To find your local early voting information, you can go to myvote.wi.gov. Early voting was the focus of a big rally supporting the Harris-Walz ticket in Madison Tuesday. Governor Tim Walz.
This election is 2 weeks from today, and early voting has started here in Wisconsin. Our team is running like everything is on the line, because everything is on the line.
Former President Barack Obama also spoke. That's what you need to know. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. This is WMDX News.
Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. Looking for something new to watch? Who isn't? Here's one of Pete's picks. If you don't have Netflix, don't feel bad. It's really expensive. But if you do have it, check out The Lincoln Lawyer. Season 3 just dropped last weekend. Manuel Garcia Rufo plays the title character, and in my opinion, is even more captivating than Matthew McConaughey's portrayal from the movie. The show is well produced and acted, and you can't beat the source material. The Lincoln Lawyer is based on crime novels by Michael Connelly. The third installment of the Dune franchise is dropping hints about the new film. Dune Messiah will be set 12 years after the end of Dune 2. Timothée Chalamet has not been officially announced as part of the cast, but is expected to be in the film. Other cast members will include Florence Pugh, Christopher Walken, and Austin Butler. Aging Timothée Chalamet 12 years? I see a Best Makeup Oscar headed their way. For more showbiz fun, tune in to Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Some showers around tonight with a mostly cloudy sky, a little breezy at times, and colder with lows in the mid-30s. And not as warm for tomorrow, a gradual clearing, highs only in the mid-50s. Shower chances return on Thursday, high upper 50s. Currently 57 degrees.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Christina Reynolds of Emily's List. Donald Trump had a quasi-town hall.
There were two questions, one on abortion and one on IVF. What he did was claim he just wanted the states to get to decide, and it is a lie. When they call it a national minimum standard, they are saying we want the federal government to get to decide and not you.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Todd Albaugh Show.
Minority Rule. The author is Ari Berman.
If you look back at Wisconsin history, it gave rise to Social Security and an unemployment insurance and collective bargaining. It really personified the idea that no matter what political party you were with, government should work for the common good. And Walker had a very different idea, that government should work for this conservative elite instead.
The Todd Albaugh Show. Weekdays, noon till 2, on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app. Maggie Dawn.
Next, I'll be joined by Minnie Timuraju, president of the Reproductive Freedom for All organization. Don't miss it.
The Maggie Dawn Show, weekday afternoons from 2 till 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Native American Community Clinic on Franklin Avenue in Minneapolis, honoring health and tradition.
Hey, we have our friend Dr. Stately on, President and Executive Officer at Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities in Minneapolis. And wow, there's some exciting news. I'm glad you're on that just came up, and it was reported by your favorite network, NPR.
one of them, one of my favorites. But yeah, NPR published a story about the Centers for Medicaid Services, which kind of like is like one of the largest funders of healthcare, right, in the country. Kind of a safety net healthcare service provider or funder insurance product or entity. They have moved forward on approving four states to have two-year pilot demonstration projects where they will cover the cost of traditional healing practices for Native people. California, Arizona, Oregon, and New Mexico, I think.
That's unbelievable. Would you ever think this in your lifetime that you'd see this? When I saw that go across my social media, I was amazed, and I'm so glad that you're on to talk about this.
Well, I'm very deeply excited that like we're at this place where we are finally in one of the largest federal health systems, right? These are demonstration projects that will fund or provide financial support for the implementation of the capacity to be reimbursed for delivering these services within IHS designated health facilities. So IHS hospitals and clinics, urban Indian health clinics that get IHS funded entities. And it's these four states that are sort of like have advanced what are called 1115 waivers to the Centers for Medicaid Services. So states get to implement different kinds of, demonstration projects that they believe would be fundamentally helpful for their state recipients of Medicaid. And they advance waivers all of the time. Like Minnesota is working on a waiver now and developing the argument and the proposal for a waiver around traditional healing as well. And looking to see some of the things that are happening at the federal level to sort of like guide some of that conversation. So it's only four states, but it's, California has the largest number of Native serving our Native people living in that state in terms of the number of tribes and also the number of Medicaid individuals. So it's a good place to test the concept and the project. So it's, all eyes are going to be on those four states for a while. So
Dr. Stately, what could you name a few traditional things that we do? I think they're different in different tribes, but I know you guys do a lot of traditional healing things too. Give a couple examples to our listeners, what that looks like.
Sure. Well, we provide a lot of these entities, and we'll do some of the similar things that we do, which is, we provide access to traditional medicines, plant-based medicine, that you can use for the four sacred medicines, cedar, sweetgrass, sage, and tobacco for smudging and praying and doing personal ceremony and those kinds of things. And then also, but also plants that are plant-based medicines for that you would create teas for. During the pandemic, we really rolled out a lot of kits for creating teas and elixirs and things that would help you with your congestion and your breathing and those kinds of things. we have also, of course, advanced food as medicine as a real very specific thing that we do. We also have created community access to ceremonies for like different kinds of healing practices that would help people help their spiritual well-being, their emotional and psychological well-being, as well as their physical well-being. But the spectrum of traditional and cultural practices that would be helpful and healthful, beneficial to us in terms of our overall health, are as broad as they are for the rest of the population, right? So an example would be things like, you know, if you were obese and you had diabetes and you had a number of other things and you were told by your doctor to do things like, you know, go see a physical therapist and, you know, learn to, you know, they have these pools that they put you in sometimes when you're obese and you have difficulty with your, so the buoyancy lightens the weight that you feel so you can be a little bit more active, those kinds. These are interventions that have been done in the broader community, but we have probably movement-based interventions that we would probably be able to do as well that would increase people's physical activity and their movement and help with all kinds of, you know, problems, you know, arthritic pain and these kinds of things. We have medicines that would treat and help people to manage pain and the experience of pain that is non-narcotic. You know, these are plant-based medicines, things like that. There's the field and the opportunity here is very broad and very wide. And I think that what's interesting is this article that I shared with you that is was published by NPR and is kind of making its way around, you know, the mm-hmm. world right now is these demonstration projects are specifically happening within the field of substance abuse and mental health services, which is kind of like, I think, where the preponderance of this work has happened for the last several, you know, decades, if it's been available. I mean, back when I got my PhD in California, we were like working on trying to find ways to bring people in to do healing work with from their original communities, and they would come and they would set up visits along with a doctor where the healer would come in with a visit with the doctor and provide some consultation to you and or to the doctor for something that you need. But we don't see that as often in the practice of family medicine or in like medical clinics as we do in these other kinds of services. So I think there's opportunity for us to see how this kind of ferrets out, and also for us to begin to think through like, well, what would this look like within like medical or medical clinical settings and for other practices. And you know, it's exciting because it opens up this whole opportunity for us as Indigenous people and other communities that also practice traditional healing methodologies, and we're not the only ones, Native people.
Right.
But it opens up this opportunity to sort of kind of invite in the potential for utilizing holistic and traditional cultural healing practices to advance health and well-being that has, you know, for decades been closed off to us.
Yeah, what's amazing during COVID, and I always like go back to that because like COVID, we didn't know before there was a vaccine. You know, we were doing I would go down the block, well, at night when it was dark, and get some flat cedar from a tree down the street and make tea. And there was many, you know, a Ho-Chunk pray with the flat cedar, but also we can use it in tea. And there was people with knowledge, the berries, those things that before a vaccine came out, we really stepped into our old ways. And that excites me too, because knowledge can be handed out freely. And also, I'm excited to see this, just the things that you're talking
about. Yeah, it's a very exciting initiative. I'm watching it closely. NAC is working along with a few other folks within the state of Minnesota, along with the state Medicaid director, we're working on some plans around how to advance the support for traditional healing through a Medicaid waiver in Minnesota as well. I think we're not too far behind some of those folks. But it's really exciting. We're going to be watching these things carefully and looking at the outcomes and you know, some of the evaluations on it. But I mean, I think one of the things that is helpful is that it gives tribes and tribal entities that deliver healthcare services to their communities that don't have a significantly large amounts of funding for program and program development. Like, you know, we have we're the lowest funded health service, federal health service, or among all of them, lower than the VA, lower than, you know, all these other programs. And so what this gives us access to is the ability to test the idea of like, well, we made these billable services and reimbursable services through traditional lines of funding, which would be third-party payer structures. How does that look and how effective will that be? And is there a way for us to implement something like this and still make it expansive enough to broaden access for our communities and give us the funding mechanism to pay for that, right? And then there's a lot of contention around that whole piece as well. But you know,
hey, we're here with Dr. Stately, and we're going to come back and we're going to do some howling and talk some more about this groundbreaking. Yeah,
that's good for your health too.
Get the howl again like the old days. Hey, this is Native Roots Radio. We'll be right back after this short break.
Everyone likes a litter-free ride on Metro Transit buses and trains, so pitch in. Take pride in your ride and take your trash off with you when you get off at your stop. You'll find trash bins at every Metro station. Want to help clean up transit stops in your neighborhood? Join the hundreds who volunteer to adopt a stop and keep it picked up. Learn more at metrotransit.org/adopt-a-stop. That's metrotransit.org/adopt-a-stop.
The city of Minneapolis is now on Native Roots Radio with Minneapolis AIR. AIR stands for American Indian Relations. Guest host Christine McDonald talks to people about important things affecting the city's Native communities. Minneapolis AIR dives into topics like public safety, public health, elections, and so much more. Tune in to Minneapolis AIR on Native Roots Radio from 5 to 6 p.m. on the second Wednesday of every month, right here on AM 950. Indigenous communities face severe threats from pollution impacting both the air we breathe and the water we cherish. Pipelines, mines, and waste incinerators near our homes lead to higher rates of asthma, diabetes, and heart disease. In the Twin Cities, Native and Black communities experience over twice the rate of asthma. Let's not forget that water is life. It's something we must protect as a vital resource and way of life. In Minneapolis, our vote helped close the Smith Foundry and Bituminous Roadways. Let's continue using our vote to fight for climate justice. Make Voting a Tradition, or MVAT, empowers Native communities by increasing voter turnout and supporting conversations about critical issues like clean air, water, and health. By getting involved, we shape the policies that protect our families and environment. Find your nearest polling location at sos.state.mn.us. Let's make voting a tradition for future generations. That's sos.state.mn.us.
Hi, this is Governor Walz. Thank you for listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This portion of the show is supported by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
How?
How?
Yeah, that was lame, Dr. Stately. Just throwing that out there. A little puppy.
It was a little late on that one, too.
Yeah, a little puppy wolf there. Hey, welcome back. We're with Dr. Stately, not a great howler, but the great doctor at Native American Development here in Minneapolis.
Development.
Clinic, Native American Community Clinic. Am I a little off today, Haley? I think I am.
Oh, just a little.
I don't know if it's just today, though. I mean,
welcome back, Dr. Stately, and amazing things. And I just want to change the subject for just 1 second, and then we can go back to that if you want to talk more about that NPR article. Have you voted yet?
I have not.
Okay. Are you a voter that votes on the day of?
I like to go to the poll.
Yeah. That is exciting.
Like, and I'll go like in the middle of like torrential rain and snowstorms. I think I like to just, I don't know. I think representation matters too. So I kind of want to show up. You know?
Yeah.
And
get the sticker.
I did have this thing that I was going to try to be like a poll, an election judge, like one of those people that like make you behave when you show up. Kind of thing.
Yeah. make sure you sign in on this line here.
Yeah. And like, you know, look at everybody's ID and make sure they're them. And so I'll just be like, you know, but I couldn't, like, it wasn't an easy process. I will just tell you that. Like, I was a little bit shocked that it was not an easy experience for me. And I had to do it online, and there was all this stuff that I had to get, like, and I was like, this is crazy. So I was like, you know, like I'm a elder, like give me a paper application, let me fill it out. And, you know, I don't want to do the, you know, like go through your like phone tree and a million other like windows on your website. I mean, you should make it easy.
How hard was it compared to the Bush grant?
Oh, well, yeah, they were different tasks, but, you know, the Bush Fellowship was, yeah, like a lot like giving birth to something, you know, so, but I think I'll try that, like, there will be another election in 2 years, right, like more local elections, stuff like that, but in 2 or 4 years, and I'll try that again, because I just think it's something that I think I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's probably the closest I could get to like political life. I don't really want to like be elected for anything, you know. Yeah. And I do have people encouraging me to run for things, but I'm like, you know, well, I don't really want to run for anything right now.
That'd be exciting to have you run. That my election judges, I guess they're called, right? Or workers?
Yeah.
They're all ancient, so I mean they've been around for a long time, and so maybe
they happen to be the people that have the most free time. I think that's why they end up doing it. So you know,
I know
if I had more free time, I probably have done it. So I would have pushed it, but I think it's really important to be civically engaged. So like I'm doing other things to do those things. I have given the, you know, the Democratic Party a significant amount of donations over the last several months. You know, I've upped it since August 5th or whenever, you know, they announced our governor as vice presidential candidate.
Mm-hmm.
And I will be honest and say that I probably give them more money now since that happened, because I really do want them to win. The opposite or the alternative is unconscionable to me and just can't happen.
Right.
And, you know, I've had discussions with relatives. Yes, I do have some relatives who, like, you know, like think that the orange one is going to be the, you know, the great hero. I was like, well, we've already tried him once. He didn't do that great of a job. And people say all kinds of things like, well, at least we know what to expect with him. I'm like, that is the point. That is the point of the conversation here. Like, we do know what to expect with him. you know, and I'm like, and I'm always shocked when I hear from my Black and my Indigenous relatives that like, that they want to support Trump. Cause I'm like, do you have any bigger understanding other than your own sort of financial well-being, which drives a lot of people's decision-making for sure. Right. But do you have any broader understanding of the implications of the decision you make on not just you and your family, but the entirety of the nation as it relates to, like, you know, women's rights, you know,
sovereignty.
I'm like, if I meet a Native person who tells me they're going to vote for Trump, I'm like, do you realize like what that man wants to do to sovereignty? Like, he would like to nothing more than to completely decimate it and like kill it.
Well, the second day that he was elected, he signed, he changed Obama's thing on Dakota Access Pipeline. It was the second day.
Yeah.
Not the third day, not the first day, the second day.
Yeah, and so I'm no Elon Musk. I'm not giving him billions of dollars, but I am giving them more than I normally would. I'm like, I'm really stretching my finances here and my financial support because I believe in it. And also because, truth be told, I want Peggy to become our next governor. So I'm like, you know, with each contribution, I put a little bit of say ma and say a prayer too. So I'm like, I'm doubling down on my efforts here.
Yeah, and that would be great, too. I don't think once she became governor, well, I shouldn't say that because Governor Walz has been on the show. I was going to say we won't be able to find the governor because she'll be so busy. And but that's not true. She's in community all over the place, and she's always been kind
of always is.
The most active lieutenant governor in my lifetime.
Yeah, and actually just not even just active for Native communities. And I think that's the other thing that is like, you know, she really does understand the principles that we sort of live by as Indigenous people, which is like, I have a responsibility to be a good relative to everyone, right? And so being a good relative to everyone doesn't mean I just take care of my own camp. I recognize that like my well-being is tied to your well-being. If the pandemic didn't teach us anything, it should have taught us that, right? So it's like, I have a responsibility to try and take care of everybody because we're all connected, you know, in so many ways. And like when we all rise, when the bottom of the rung rises, everybody rises. And so take care of the people who have historically not been taken care of well. And when you build a structure that does that, everybody gets better. Everybody improves. Things improve for everyone. And I think she really gets that. And she does a lot of work out in the community in all kinds of areas, in education and public safety. She's like in all these spaces. And, you know, she really does her best to sort of, like when I make an effort, a plea for something related to the work I do, they make an effort to respond. And they usually get a response from them within a fairly decent amount of time, like a few days or a few weeks.
Yeah.
But,
well, yeah. And it's
but most importantly, it's going to be a historic thing.
Oh,
like, do people understand the historical significance of electing, you know, that ticket, and then also her moving up to governor. And I know that Billy Joe Champion has said that he doesn't want to sort of advance, but like, can you imagine an executive office and executive branch in the state of Minnesota where an Indigenous person, a Black person, are holding the two senior roles? That's like historic. That's never happened ever in any state.
Yeah. Exactly.
So,
wow.
You know, we have the opportunity to really, really change things. And we have the opportunity to change what our children see as the opportunities for them in the future. And that's a really, really an important thing to do.
Absolutely.
We got to look farther than just the front door, what's on our front door. We got to look down the road.
Absolutely. Dr. Stately, thank you so much for coming on and always coming on and being there. Dr. Stately, CEO and president of Native American Community Clinic here in the Twin Cities. Thank you so much. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
And free Leonard Peltier now.
You're listening to WBZH, Hayward's home for the Todd Allbald Show.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez will be here to talk early voting, our number two public service announcement, and this shouldn't be a thing. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
This is your hometown radio, Refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
This is the Buzz of the North. WBZH 910 AM, W245 CT Hayward, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Mike Dubusky. A busy night out on the campaign trail, now with just 14 days left until Election Day. At a rally in Racine, Wisconsin, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz told supporters no one is more qualified to be president than his running mate, Vice President Kamala Harris.
We're running like everything's on the line because